Freya, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. U.S. special operators to be sent to Iraq to fight the Islamic State group.
Tens of thousands of U.S. personnel are operating in the broader Middle East region. More on the way. We have some of our most advanced air and naval forces attacking ISIL.
U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter announced the deployment Tuesday during testimony before the House Armed Services Committee. The Specialized Expeditionary Targeting Force will consist of approximately 200 Special Forces personnel and could be in place within weeks. U.S. President Barack Obama says climate change is an economic and security imperative that must be tackled now. Mr. Obama spoke to reporters Tuesday on the sidelines of the UN climate summit outside Paris.
If we let the world keep warming as fast as it is, and sea levels rising as fast as they are, and weather patterns keep shifting in more unexpected ways, then before long we are going to have to devote more and more and more of our economic and military resources not to growing opportunity for our people, but to adapting to the various consequences of a changing planet.
World leaders at the Paris summit are trying to agree on measures they hope will keep global temperatures from rising more than 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial revolution levels. The Syrian-based Islamic State group has expanded its reach in Africa. A top leader of the U.S. Africa Command says the group is courting Islamist extremists from Nigeria to Somalia, while establishing a major nerve center close to Europe. Vice Admiral Michael Franklin says the group was grown to about 2,000 people in and around the city of Sirte. This is VOA News. NATO says it will keep about 12,000 troops in Afghanistan for an extra year in 2016 to prevent the country from again becoming a safe haven for terrorists. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said Tuesday the alliance will pledge approximately 12,000 troops as part of its Resolute Support mission in the region. In another part of the world, NATO foreign ministers are looking at ways to beef up security along Turkey's border. Officials at a foreign ministers' meeting in Brussels said Tuesday those additional measures could include more ships in the Mediterranean, more alliance planes at Incirlik Air Base in Turkey, and a bolstered missile defense system.
We have long-standing plans for defending Turkey. We keep them under active review and strengthening them further.
The discussions come a week after Turkey shot down a Russian fighter jet along the Syrian border. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said members should decide in the next few weeks on specific measures it would take for Turkey. An explosion near a commuter rail station in Istanbul, Turkey, Tuesday wounded at least five people and brought the transportation system to a halt. A local official in Istanbul said the explosion near the city's Bayram Pasa station was caused by a pipe bomb. There was no claim of responsibility. The anti-corruption group Transparency International estimates that 75 million Africans paid a bribe in the past year. That figure is included in a report that says most Africans believe corruption is getting worse. Researchers surveyed more than 43,000 people in sub-Saharan Africa about corruption. 58% say they believe corruption had increased in their country during the previous 12 months. A Philippine regional court has found a U.S. Marine guilty of killing a transgendered person. Simone Orendine reports.
A regional trial court judge in Alungapo City found Lance Corporal Joseph Scott Pemberton guilty of homicide for killing Jennifer Laude after he found out she was a transgender woman. Judge Rolene Hines-Havalde sentenced Pemberton to 6 to 12 years in prison with credit for his confinement and ordered him to pay close to $100,000 in damages to the Laude family. Simone Orendine, Alungapo City, the Philippines.
Human Rights Watch says former U.S. President George W. Bush and other key former government officials should be criminally investigated for their role in the interrogation of suspected terrorists. The group dismisses claims by the Obama administration that there are legal obstacles to prosecuting the officials. Mr. Obama's Justice Department ended a criminal inquiry into the so-called Enhanced Interrogation Program in 2012. In Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Wednesday, December 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. African leaders highlight greater impact of climate change on the continent.
There's no greater evidence of the impact of environmental degradation and climate change than the advancement of the Sahara Desert and the shrinking of the once mighty Lake Chad.
Nkosi Nana Dlamini Zuba is the chairperson of the African Union Commission. African development appears to be on a collision course with the environment. Big expectations are with Burkina Faso's new president, and a U.S. senator calls for redoubling of international efforts to support a political solution to the Burundian crisis.
Let me be clear. There is no substitute for a commitment by the Burundians themselves when it comes to finding a way forward. They themselves must choose the path of peace. I firmly believe in cooperation with our international partners, we can provide the right incentives for them to do that.
Senator Ben Cardin is a Democratic senator from the U.S. state of Maryland. Meanwhile, a Burundian official criticized President Barack Obama's sanctions on his country. And Chinese President Xi Jinping continues his two-day state visit to Zimbabwe today, Wednesday. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. After a strong start that included commitments from world leaders on reducing carbon emissions, delegates from nearly 200 countries sat down Tuesday to work on reaching a deal to do more to curb global warming. Before departing the summit, President Barack Obama said action on climate change is an economic and security imperative. VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez reports from the site of the 12-day conference in the suburb of Paris, where talks on Tuesday centered largely on Africa's environmental problems.
For years, the levels of Lake Chad have been dropping at an alarming rate. More recently, the lake's receding shores have also been witness to another calamity, the terror unleashed by the Boko Haram militant group. At the climate summit, along with pledging billions of dollars for green energy projects, France said action is needed to ease the suffering of those who live along the shores of Lake Chad.
We know they have an environmental crisis on top of a security crisis due to the actions of Boko Haram in this region.
African leaders say the need to act and save Lake Chad is urgent.
La profondeur du lac qui était de 5 mètres est revenue aujourd'hui autour de 1 mètre.
It used to be 5 meters deep and now is only 1 meter to 1.5 meters deep.
C'est une catastrophe.
So it is an absolute catastrophe. The catastrophe of the century, and humanity must do something about it.
For African leaders, it is important to come away from the meeting with not just words, and they warned against donor nations not honoring pledges for assistance.
COP21 is critical for all humanity because climate change affects all of us, rich and poor, large and small countries, and all regions of the world. But there is no greater evidence of the impact of environmental degradation and climate change than the advancement of the Sahara Desert and the shrinking of the once mighty Lake Chad.
President Obama called for at least some parts of any agreement that emerges to be legally binding. The world's security, he believes, depends on acting decisively to slow down global warming.
This is an economic and security imperative that we have to tackle now.
This is the largest ever gathering of world leaders, with the summit taking place less than 3 weeks after France suffered terrorist attacks that killed 130 people, the worst violence on its soil since the Second World War. The issue of security hangs heavily over the discussions. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, Paris.
As the United Nations Climate Summit continues in Paris, among the issues on the table is the divide between rich and poor countries, with the poorer, more vulnerable countries saying the wealthy should pay for adaptation to climate change. As VOA's Roseanne Scurble reports, huge investment projects are speeding ahead in Africa, where economic and agricultural development could be on a collision course with the environment.
The population in Africa is expected to nearly quadruple this century. This creates an unparalleled urgency to produce more food. At the same time, the continent is rapidly opening up to extensive mining, largely driven by foreign money.
Because of all that, there's these gigantic proposals for creating roads, highways, railroads, major projects that are going to penetrate into often remote interior regions of Africa.
William Lawrence is director of the Center for Tropical, Environmental, and Sustainability Science at James Cook University in Australia. He says these development corridors, which on average are between 1,000 and 4,000 kilometers long, would have an enormous impact on the continent.
They crisscross Africa. They would total more than 53,000 kilometers in length, and they just look like a giant spider web laid over the top of Africa.
But he says no overall plan or strategy exists to coordinate the many players, both foreign and domestic. In a study published in the journal Current Biology, Lawrence and his team assessed 33 major projects, either proposed or already underway. The assessment accounts for human population, agricultural potential, and environmental values, including biodiversity, endangered species, and critical habitat for wildlife and vegetation for storing carbon.
There was about six of the projects that looked like they were a pretty good idea in the sense that they were going to yield a lot of agricultural benefits and not huge environmental costs. And then there was another six that I would take off the board immediately that were going to go slice into the heart of some of the most environmentally important areas of Africa, such as the Congo Basin and West African forests and some of the really critical equatorial and sub-equatorial forests of East Africa, places that are amazingly rich in wildlife and environmental resources.
The other projects fit somewhere in the middle. Lawrence advises caution moving forward. He says what may appear to be a great deal up front may turn out to yield unintended consequences. Take, for example, a large mining operation.
Limited numbers of people get really wealthy, and there is some more employment. But oftentimes what you find is there are still large segments of the population that are having to deal with everything suddenly, you know, food, rent, everything's becoming a lot more expensive, and they're not getting much benefit from it at all.
Lawrence calls for local and national studies that can direct governments to deploy mitigation measures and environmental safeguards that will assure a more positive future. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
Supporters of newly elected Burkina Faso President Roch Marc Christian Kabore are celebrating his victory and a smooth ending to a year of transition after mass protests ousted longtime leader Blaise Compaoré. But how much change can actually be expected? The former prime minister spent decades in Compaoré's government, only leaving his side last year as Compaoré tried to extend his 27-year rule. Emily Yop reports from Ouagadougou.
A few minutes after the official announcement of his victory, Kabore took the stage and made sure to repeat his pledge.
Aux jeunes, aux femmes et aux anciens, je tiens à réitérer ma détermination à mettre en œuvre mon programme.
To the youth, to the women, and to the elderly, he said, I would like to say that I'm determined to implement my political program to open the opportunity for a better tomorrow. Gathering more than half the vote Sunday in the first round victory, Kabore managed to convince voters that he could bring some fresh air to the West African nation a year after massive protests ended former President Blaise Compaoré's 27-year rule, and despite the fact that he served in Compaoré's governments for 25 years. Voter Abdoul Fattah Bogodo believes Kabore is different, precisely because he decided to leave the ruling party after he disagreed with Compaoré's actions.
Le régime de Blaise Compaoré c'était la dictature, la corruption.
He says Blaise Compaoré's regime was a dictatorship. It was corruption. But with Compaoré, he will put everything back in order, Bogodo says. Voter Moussa Nadem Bega also trusts the new president, but won't be satisfied until changes are apparent.
Le président élu, il a un lourd fardeau sur la tête. Nous venons de sortir de l'insurrection. La transition a pris fin. Je pense que il a du
Nadem Bega says the newly elected president has a big burden on his shoulders. We just came out of the insurrection and the transition period. I think he has a lot of work ahead of him, Nadem Bega says, and he has to follow through. Daniela Izenga, a research associate with the Sahel Research Group, says Kabore's policies are not so different from the CDP, Compaoré's former ruling party.
in terms of their policies, in terms of their political ideology, they look very similar to the former policies and ideology of the CDP.
On the same day that the Burkina Bay chose their new president, they also were asked to choose their parliament. Aizenga said the composition of the new parliament will be key to the new president's party, the MPP, being able to govern effectively.
The way that the MPP broke with the CDP in the past means that the MPP has some immediate political adversaries. The MPP could face some challenges against a very strong opposition in the National Assembly.
Kabore's main opposition in parliament is likely to be the UPC, the party of longtime opposition leader Zeferin Diabre, who came in second in the presidential poll with 29% of the vote. Emilia Opra, VOA News in Ouagadougou.
To this Wednesday, December 2nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. A U.S. senator has called for the redoubling of international efforts to support a political solution to the Burundian crisis. But speaking Tuesday in Washington, Senator Ben Cardin made it clear that no international effort can be a substitute for a commitment by Burundians themselves when it comes to finding a way forward.
The violence is taking a troubling overturns. Bodies of those who have been clearly victims of execution-style killing are found daily on the streets of Bujumbura, Burundi's capital. The families of political opponents are now being targeted and killed. Government officials have been murdered. In November, Burundian officials engaged in alarming rhetoric reminiscent of the language used to incite and carry out the genocide in Rwanda. Intended or not, such comments are deeply disturbing. The United States has been actively engaged and preventive action and diplomacy for some time. On November 23rd, President Obama issued an executive order sanctioning four individuals whose actions have been threatened the peace and security of Burundi. He also announced that as of January, Burundi will no longer be eligible for preferential trade benefits under the African Growth and Opportunity Act. However, the violence continues. We must redouble our efforts to support a political solution to this current crisis. Let me be clear. There is no substitute for a commitment by the Burundians themselves when it comes to finding a way forward. They themselves must choose the path of peace. But I firmly believe in cooperation with our international partners, we can provide the right incentives for them to do that. We can take other meaningful actions in pursuit of an agreement. First, we must help the African Union finalize contingency plans for an African-led mission to prevent widespread violence in the country. Second, I call upon the AU to convene a meeting with special envoys from the United Nations, African Union, United States, the European Union, and Belgium, as well as representatives from the East African community to discuss coordination between donors, the United Nations, the AU, on the Security Council's recommendations, and to identify ways that the international actors can support the increased number of human rights monitors and military observers authorized by the AU in October. Third, it is imperative that we help put in place mechanisms for accountability for those who have engaged in extrajudicial killings during this period of time. Those who have committed these atrocities must be held accountable. We cannot allow those who perpetrate these crimes to go unpunished. Diplomatic engagement to prevent political violence that has the potential to become ethnically based killing is exactly what we and the rest of the international community must focus on addressing.
That's U.S. Democratic Senator Ben Cardin of the state of Maryland speaking Tuesday on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. A Burundian official says his country is ready for a dialogue with all Burundians in and outside the country. But Willy Nyamitwe, senior advisor of media and communication to President Pierre Nkurunziza, says President Barack Obama's sanctions imposed last month on four Burundians are punishing those who, he said, are working every day to restore peace and security in Burundi.
You cannot put in the same box plotters and the persons who have been fighting against the coup. So what I wanted to emphasize is that U.S. administration has imposed sanctions towards some Burundians, but amongst them, a minister in charge of security who has been working day and night to restore peace and security in the country, and a high-ranked person in the police who has been also working hard to restore peace and security. So you cannot put in the same box plotters and the persons who have been fighting against terrorist attacks in the country.
You will understand the White House blamed these people who are responsible for security in your country as partly responsible for the violence in your country.
Not at all. I think Burundi is only victim of a vast campaign of distortion of information. And the persons who are leading this campaign are maybe into President Obama's cabinet. I can mention some of the power.
So let's talk about the dialogue. Everybody is talking about the dialogue. Is your government ready for dialogue and with whom?
The country, Burundi, is ready for dialogue. And this dialogue must be inclusive. That means all Burundians from all the sectors, all Burundians from abroad or those living in the country, all must be invited into this dialogue.
If your government says it is ready for dialogue, why is it that some people say that the political space in your country is closed, the independent media is closed down, all the opposition people are in exile? That does not show that you're ready for dialogue.
We are ready for dialogue. There is a commission in charge of dialogue. 15 members have been appointed, and Burundians are ready to sit down and dialogue. We are trying to strengthen our democracy, but some persons who are not well informed think that in the country, political space is closed. It isn't closed.
Would you say that your government is in control of the situation in the country? Because some people dispute that.
Everything is under control, and the disarmament campaign is successful. And every day, weapons are being seized from the civilians. So far, if you come in the country, you can see that all the parts of the country are at peace and criminality is decreasing. So that means everything is under control, but we are fighting against some terrorists who continue to throw grenades or to kill some civilians.
Willy Nyamitwe is the senior advisor of media and communication to Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. Chinese President Xi Jinping continues his two-day state visit to Zimbabwe today, Wednesday. As Erwin Chifera reports from Harare, the Chinese president is expected to sign multi-million dollar deals with President Robert Mugabe's government.
President Robert Mugabe welcomed Mr. Xi at the Harare International Airport, where some Zimbabwean and Chinese nationals, including school children and ZANU-PF supporters, wearing their party regalia, gave the Chinese leader a rousing welcome. Some wore T-shirts praising the friendship between Zimbabwe and China, which enders 35 years this year. Several government ministers and diplomats also turned up to welcome the Chinese leader. Mr. Xi inspected a guard of honor at the airport, but did not speak on his arrival. He is expected to address a joint press conference with Mr. Mugabe after signing economic deals at the State House. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa told journalists at the airport that Mr. Xi's visit will play a crucial role in reviving Zimbabwe's economy. He said Zimbabwe's priority is on power and energy generation, as the economy cannot be revived if energy shortages continue.
We cannot have economic recovery and take off unless we address the infrastructure gap, primarily in the energy sector. We cannot run mines, smelting plants, agriculture, irrigation, unless we have uninterrupted power supply, which is why all our efforts have been devoted towards investments into energy.
With the Chinese already funding the Kariba South power station extension, more power deals will be signed.
We are going to be signing an agreement for support to Hwange 7 and 8, which again, if undertaken, will add 600 megawatts. And we have been in negotiations with them with respect to private sector-driven power projects, which again, if funded, will add a total of 1,800 megawatts.
China is Zimbabwe's biggest foreign investor, pumping in $600 million in 2013, according to Chinese ambassador to Harare, Yuang Ping. The visit has raised hopes that China will help stabilize Zimbabwe's faltering economy. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Rwanda squeezed a 5-3 advantage in a post-match penalty shootout to eliminate defending champions Kenya in the quarterfinals at the Council of East and Central Africa Football Association's SECAFA Senior Challenge Cup in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia on Tuesday. The two sides played to a scoreless stalemate in open play. Similarly, Sudan edged South Sudan 5-3 in a post-match penalty shootout after they played to a scoreless draw. Elsewhere, hosts Senegal dismissed Tunisia 2-0 to become the first team to qualify for the semifinals at the Under-23 Africa Cup of Nations in Dakar on Tuesday. In the other Group A tie, South Africa pipped Zambia 3-2. Today, Wednesday, attention shifts to Group B in Mboa, some 70 kilometers southeast of Dakar, where Algeria play Mali before Nigeria engage Egypt. In basketball, Nigeria's Dolphins outplayed Burundi's Berco Stars 105-75. At the Africa Women's Club Basketball Championships in Luanda, Angola, on Tuesday. Angola's Primero de Agosto outclassed the Democratic Republic of Congo's RADI 82-36. Cameroon's INJS edged Angola's Makoluso 55-51. Nigeria's First Bank outwitted Kenya's United States International University 89-63, and Mozambique's Ferroviario de Maputo prevailed over the Democratic Republic of Congo's INSS 68-57. In Olympic news, citizens of the German port city of Hamburg voted in a referendum by 51.6% to reject the city's bid to stage the 2024 Olympics and Paralympics. According to the International Olympic Committee president Thomas Bach, who is German, the vote has been influenced by budgetary concerns, the scandals around Germany's award of the 2006 FIFA World Cup, recent doping scandals, and a growing refugee crisis in which Germany expects 1 million refugees to enter the country by the end of this year. The other cities still in the running to host the 2024 Games are Budapest in Hungary, Los Angeles in the United States of America, the French capital Paris, and the Italian capital Rome. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The anti-corruption group Transparency International estimates that 75 million Africans paid a bribe in the past year in a report that says most Africans believe corruption is getting worse. Researchers surveyed more than 43,000 people in Africa about their experiences and perceptions regarding corruption. 58% say they believe corruption had increased in their country during the previous 12 months. Many African presidents had campaigned on pledges to reduce or eliminate corruption, but the problem appears to persist continent-wide. A majority of respondents in 18 countries surveyed said their government is doing badly at fighting corruption, particularly in regard to public services such as the courts and the police. 28% of those who had contact with the court said they paid a bribe. That's it for this Wednesday, December 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as Post Editor Mark Oman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Botte in Washington, saying, have a great day, Africa.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Mm.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, after nearly 2 years of fighting the Ebola pandemic, Sierra Leone announced last month that the nation was Ebola-free. Guinean officials have declared that they will also soon be free of the virus. Join us Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Chaka Sali and his guests discuss the battle to completely end Ebola in West Africa. That's next time on VOA Africa.